Hey guys, Jack here. Thanks as always for tuning in. Remember to head to our website, justhandspoker.com. There you'll find lots of other great poker content and everything else your heart could desire. And again, thank you for tuning in and enjoy this week's episode.
Hey Jack.
Hey Zach. What's going on?
Not much. Currently in St. Louis. How about you?
I'm in New York. My location has been much more predictable as of late. How's St. Louis? Is there poker in St. Louis?
There is. I don't think I'll have a chance to play, actually. But it's beautiful here, staying with my godfather, so having a great time. Yeah, so today we have on a very special guest, someone near and dear to my heart. He is as close to a cousin as someone can be. When I was based in D.C., if you listeners remember a few months back, I was actually living in his home. Today we have financial planner, advisor, union member, and community organizer Zach Teutsch on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Well, that's quite an introduction. Thank you, Zach. And, you know, I'm also a fan of the podcast, so it's really an honor to be here with you guys.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. So let's do it. Let's talk some poker. You have a hand for us, Zach?
Yeah, so this hand is from a sort of a social home game that I play in every once in a while. It's, you know, your sort of very typical 10 cent, 20 cent, no limit game where most folks buy in at $20. So, you know, stacks are frequently like in the, you know, $40 or $50 and on down kind of range. So at this was, I think there were seven people at the table at the time. First to act folds. Second to act, who, if I remember correctly, is a player who had been raising a lot, not somebody I know real well, but somebody I'd be very happy to be in a pot with, raises to 60 cents, three big blinds. Then we get two folds. I'm the dealer, and I raise 120, which is a little bit light because I'd be happy to have the action here. I'm holding a pair of fours with a club and a diamond. The small...
All right. Blind... Well, oh, sorry. We normally like to... as you may know, jump in and discuss each decision point. So you're holding pocket fours on the button, or did I hear that correctly?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, and so you decide to make a small raise, make it $1.20 over 60 cents.
Right.
Do you remember how much the effective stack was between you and...
I think I'm at something like $30 there, and... The early out of position raiser, I think has somewhat less, but I don't remember exactly. I would guess somewhere in like the 15 to 25 range. Didn't write it down.
Okay. So bring us in on sort of what you're thinking with this raise. What are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to win the pot now?
You know, I would be perfectly happy to win the pot now, but I don't think that's what's going on. What I'd really rather see is isolate this early position guy who's been raising quite a lot and start building a pot on the assumption that I'm positive equity here when I'm in position against this particular player.
Mm-hmm. So I think I like the idea. I like that you're thinking about isolating. I like that you're identifying that your position is going to be helpful in playing this pot. And I think you're also right that normally you're not going to get a fold. And so for a raise this small to be correct, it has to be, or not correct, for it to be a good raise, it has to be a raise where you're happy to play this hand when called. So there are some raises where getting called is a fairly negative event. I would say actually most raises when you get called, it's a fairly negative event. Normally, our highest EV outcome is going to be getting the fold right away. Since you can think of it like this, like when you win the pot right here, you win everything in the pot. And when you get called, you have to now get at least that much out of the pot in addition to the $1.20 that you have invested.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And perhaps in retrospect, I think probably a 3x raise here is better than a 2x raise for just that reason.
I think generally a raise that's going to get some folds is best because there are very few hands you're going to have that actually really, really want to get called. Like, you know, aces, kings, queens, those hands want to get called. You want action, but most hands would really prefer to win the pot right away. And so since you don't want to choose a sizing that you're only going to use with aces, kings, and queens in most situations, I think raising with your whole range to a size that could get some folds is going to be best. So if you were going to raise fours along with the other hands you might want to raise here, I would definitely choose, I think 3x is a fine size. Especially if you think this player is not very good and is going to come along with too many hands, and therefore you're going to have more hands that are happy to get called versus would rather see a fold. So that's the first aspect of it, and so I think we're in agreement on that. Zach, do you want to talk about choosing fours as a hand to raise in the first place?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking throughout this. So isolating when you're fairly deep against like a loose player that you feel like is playing too many hands and is going to be likely to make some mistakes post-flop, I think is good. Pocket fours is generally, or like a low pocket pair is one of the worst candidates to do this with. This is a hand where in position, you're going to have pretty good implied odds when the blinds call if you were to just flat, as well as just kind of flatting this guy's raise. And it's a hand that's kind of difficult to play and realize your equity with when you don't flop a set. That being said, sometimes I do 3-bet isolate with pocket pairs when stacks are very deep and the player is, you know, pretty poor, because then my implied odds actually do go up. Because then I can kind of put the whole stack at play. And if I think a player is just going to be making a lot of mistakes, I think I'll be able to realize my equity and then some with that hand in position. So I would say, you know, with the information I have about this game, the way I feel about this is if you were to raise to a bit of, you know, a larger sizing, kind of around 3x the jack suggested, I would say this is probably like a somewhat neutral EV play, like maybe slightly positive, maybe a little bit negative. But if, you know, I knew that the player was really bad and maybe we were a little bit deeper, I'd say it's a slam dunk 3-bet.
Yeah, I mean, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think what I had been thinking and hadn't adequately thought it through here is that, you know, I figure something like an eighth of the time I'm going to hit that set, and some of the other time I can realize positive equity with other plays. The problem is it's going to be hard for me to get paid off even as well disguised as my set is likely to be from the guy who was the initial raiser. And I think I have to really take seriously how hard it is going to get to be paid off, even in the situation where I hit my set, as I'm thinking about the expected value here. And I think I may have intuitively overrated it because I didn't think about how many hands this guy's in and how likely he is to bail, even if I get a well decided. I mean, I think the only way to actually make money there is to figure out how to appear weak and get him to make a play. And even so, it's not going to be a very big play.
Right. I think that's an excellent, excellent point. And so just to sort of rephrase what you said, what will often happen when we call and flop a set is that our opponent will make a continuation bet. I think most opponents will make a continuation bet, you know, at least like 50 or 60% of the time. And some opponents will basically always make a continuation bet. So that's, you know, we're in position where we're sort of guaranteed at least that much when we hit our set. When we make this raise, we're putting in that money before we know that we've hit our set. And then our opponent is very unlikely to put in money on the flop. So we're going to have to make the bet. And I think our opponent will fold a lot, as you're alluding to. I think the other thing you mentioned, which I want to dive into a little bit, is that you're talking about the way you're going to recoup this bet is from a combination of making sets and other plays. But what are those other plays? Because I think that's the big problem with fours, is that there are not many clear options that present themselves. Fours very rarely will give you a very good semi-bluffing opportunity. And it'll also rarely be a hand that, you know, we're going to be very happy to get to showdown with if we have to call more than maybe one bet. And even that can get a little hairy. So I guess my point is that I think when we raise and are always expecting to get called, it is going to be hard for us to get that much value when we hit our set. And also, I think we're just going to be checking back the flop a lot and not having a very good plan on the Turner River. Or not having very many good options without flopping a set. Or without turning a set.
I mean, that sounds right to me. I'm now completely convinced that I should be flat calling or raising more substantially here, and that this actually is a mistake. And in fact, it's especially a mistake if I'm not going to make a C bet on a flop full of blanks. But I presume we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah. I mean, so I think fours doesn't function that much differently than just like a random two cards if you can expect to profitably just raise and then c-bet, and if that'll be profitable, then you can probably just be isolating this guy with all kinds of hands, which is fine, but fours presents some other interesting options, which is why I prefer calling.
Okay, so Zach, what happens after you make the three-bet?
All right, so I make the three-bet, and then I get some interesting and not great news, which is the small blind, who's the best player at the table, calls. The good news is I'm happy that this hand's a little bit bigger because when I make my hand, it's well disguised. So the more people in the pot, the better. The problem is the guy in the small is a better poker player than I am for sure. And he plays a very wide range of hands, which makes it tricky to read, especially in the situations that I'm looking for, like where some bad cards hit. You know, I really have, he has a hugely wide range that he'll play, which, you know, is certainly interesting for us, but I'm never happy when, you know, when I'm in a small, you know, the smaller hand I'm in with the small blind, the worse, typically. He's the only guy at the table who's, I think, is a notably better player than I am.
So that's interesting that you say that, since I think flatting a three bet out of the small blind is like a notoriously limiting spot in terms of someone's range. I think there are many players who will only ever have hands like some ace king, ace queen suited, jacks, tens, nines, maybe eights when they're flatting here. So if I think it's interesting and surprising that you think this player will have a very wide range of hands in this spot. And we would definitely like that. It's much better for us, I would say, if this player is flatting with a much wider range, since the types of hands that can really put our fours into trouble are those medium pairs, which will set overset us at some frequency and not put in a ton of money into the pot likely otherwise, especially a hand like eights or nines, where overcards will come at a very high frequency.
Yeah, that makes sense. As I'm hearing you talk it through, I actually didn't realize the extent to which flatting in that spot implies substantial strength. I would have, you know, I'm curious to follow up with this guy and see what he'll actually tell me about what his range is there, if he'll tell me anything. But I would have assumed that various like suited connectors and various combinations of high cards of various sorts, you know, pink kind of stuff, ace king, ace queen, ace jack, all, maybe even ace 10 are in the range there.
Hmm.
Although it's a bad position, so I doubt ace 10 is in play. But
I would say if this was a good player, I would not put any ace jack offsuit in their range. I would maybe put some ace jack suited. Like if I'm in this spot here, and can I see what happens if I think that the early position guy is like never four betting light, and I have ace jack suited, and maybe I'm like 200 big blinds deep with everyone and feel like I have a big skill edge, I might call. But that's kind of like, you know, the widest I would go.
Also, do you normally three bet to a larger sizing, or is
that's
this
a good a good question. Normally, this is I rarely struggling to remember why I made a light three bet here, because ordinarily I would flat or make a more substantial raise. But I think maybe I was worried that if I make a full re-raise there, I'm going to lose the chance to play that pot with that guy. But again, that it's not clear that why I wouldn't just flat if that's my concern. I don't see the advantage of three betting light. So I don't, could be that maybe the guy in first position has a read because this is an unusual play for me. You know, he might have known more about my play than I actually did in that spot. Perhaps not. Maybe I'm just unreasonably scared.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just throwing that out there, since if this player is perceptive, and by his description, I would say it sounds like he is going to be at least somewhat perceptive, he might be flatting with a somewhat wider range, thinking that your, you know, 2x 3-bet might be capped. Because I'm assuming if he thought it was always aces, he would probably fold.
That's right.
Unless he wanted to be, unless he was going to be very ambitious about it.
Right.
Or call with every pocket pair.
Sure. Okay. So this player calls. Big blind.
Yep.
Folds.
The initial raiser calls, so the pot's right, and there's 370 in it.
Okay. And do you remember how deep you were with the small blind?
If I remember correctly, we both had somewhere in the neighborhood of about $30 at that point behind.
All right. Well, let's proceed saying that you're $30 deep, or to start the hand with a small blind, and $20 deep to start the hand with under the gun plus one.
Yep, that sounds right.
Cool. Preflop, man. Preflop is it's a complicated subject.
Yeah, and I think it would be very hard to make the argument that I played this correctly preflop. The thing that I'm especially curious about is going to be the turn and river bet sizing, but I think I actually also maybe made a mistake after the flop. So the flop comes three of hearts, queen of spade, nine of clubs. So it's not super interesting, and there are two checks to me.
So did you say that was three, queen, nine, rainbow?
Yep, that's right.
Zach, my first question is, do either of these players have a donking range in this spot, you think?
Tell me more about what you mean, Zach.
Sorry, do you think any of these players will ever lead out at any frequency?
Oh, you mean lead light?
No, I just mean lead with any part of their range, value or bluffs.
Yeah.
Or you think they're always checking the preflop raiser.
Oh, that's interesting. I think that there's some chance that if the guy in first position hits something, he may bet. I think it's more likely that he's going to look to check raise, though, especially considering it's reasonably likely that somebody's going to raise behind him. And the second to act here, I don't think is disciplined enough to realize that he doesn't have the momentum anymore because he got re-raised and then called. So he would play it just as if he were, you know, he were the last person to bet, I think. You know, that's my record. Now it's convenient that I haven't said what his name is, because I'm going to obviously have to play with him again. That's the nature of a social game. He may even hear the podcast. So hopefully he won't know who he is.
If you're listening, please write us in and let us know. That'd be awesome. Yeah. So I guess what I'm hearing you say is that it is a significant event in terms of the composition of the under the gun plus one player's range that he checked on this flop. It would make a hand like ace queen less likely.
I think that's right. I think his checking here actually is weak almost all the time.
Okay.
I'm not at all sure in the small blind, especially considering that I would consider things like threes to be well within his range, and I would think that it was not necessarily the most likely, but certainly reasonably likely that if he had a set here, he's checking. I think, yeah, so that's... I'm sorry, Jack, I cut you off. You were about to make a point, I think.
Oh, well, I mean, I think obviously we have to decide whether to check or to bet here. I think the pros for checking, and I guess you could say in addition to checking, we are not betting. The pros for not betting are that we have a pretty bad hand without a very good chance of improving to a good hand. And so for this bet to be successful, it's going to have to work a lot. And it's going to have to work a lot right now, since if it doesn't work now, then we're not going to get bailed out a lot. You know, if we had Jack 10 and it didn't work now, we're going to get bailed out a good amount. when a king or a nine comes. But with fours, we really have two outs to ever have a hand that we're very confident in. And even those hands, well, I mean, we'd be pretty happy to go with it at that point. You know, I would say queens and nines and perhaps threes are all in. They're all possible for the under the gun player. Sorry, not the under the gun player, the small blind. So my point is that we really need to be pretty sure that both these players are going to fold if we are going to successfully bet here. We have evidence that the under the gun plus one player has a weak range, so I don't hate putting out a small feeler bet. Not a feeler bet. I hate that term. It's not a feeler bet. A small bluff. just betting something like 40% pot to try and take it down now, and then giving up if that doesn't work. I think that's a very reasonable play. I also don't mind just checking and giving up.
Yeah, when you bet 40% of the pot, it only needs to work a little less than 30% of the time. So if you think it's reasonable that both players will fold, you know, around then maybe a little bit more, then you have a profitable bluff that, you know, even if it doesn't work most of the time, will still make sense.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, if I had, say, ace queen here, I would very likely have bet back out for half the pot, which, you know, and if I see bet, it's also going to be roughly half the pot. I hadn't really thought about 40% versus 50%. I probably would have chosen a decently round number somewhere in the middle of the range.
Yeah, it's unlikely to matter much.
Yeah, I think that's right. So I thought about it. I don't remember why I didn't. My thinking at that point is that I have a fairly limited exposure at this point, and if I check, I'm going to get a free card with in a drawing situation. It's unlikely to help me, but it's reasonably likely that it'll be another blank, and I'll see two more checks. And if I do see that, I'm very likely to fold at that point. I'm very likely to make a C bet, which is very likely to work. That's the whole advantage of being in position there, I would think. So I think a C bet now actually is probably a plus equity play. And I'm not really sold on a check, but I think the check reasonably limits the downside here, and I'll be in a better spot maybe next time, although maybe the C bet next time isn't necessarily as effective because checking here is a pretty weak play.
Yeah, I think passing on the opportunity to bet the flop should substantially decrease the amount of hands you're heading to the turn with that would be strong enough to bet for value on the turn. So I think you have, I would say, many more hands that could plausibly, you know, represent a hand that's strong enough that it wants to get called on this flop than on the turn. So if I were going to put out a bluff to try and get a hand like, say, pocket sevens, pocket sixes, 8-9 suited, 9-10 suited from the small blind to fold, I would want to do it now. I don't think it will be successful on the turn unless you have a very good card for your overall range, which would be something like a king, maybe an ace. The problem with those cards is that those interact pretty well with the weekend range from under the gun plus one. So I would say if you're going to bluff with a hand that really has no ability to improve, it's not like you're going to turn any backdoor draws with fours. I would do it now on the flop. And if you check behind here, I would just not be planning on putting in another cent into the pot unless you have a set.
And this kind of illustrates the, you know, kind of the problems with playing a low pocket pair post flop. When you choose kind of a light three bet with a hand like maybe 5-4 suited, well, now on this flop you still have five high, but you have a lot of cards on the turn that give you now a backdoor flush draw and a backdoor straight draw. You now have a backdoor straight and flush draw and a lot of cards on the turn where you have a profitable semi bluff, where with these low pocket pairs, if you miss, you kind of like feel like maybe you should bluff but maybe not, and it's just, you know.
No, I think that's right. And I think that checking here is probably a poor play.
I don't think it's necessarily a poor play, but I think checking with the plan of betting on the turn when checked to again, is unlikely to be a good play unless you're in a game with very, very weak opponents who will basically just always fold unless they have, you know, a top pair or, I guess, like a middle or a second pair type hand or better.
Yeah, I think that's right.
All right, so we check, and I think checking and betting like half pot are not likely to be too different, although I think given what we said about under the gun plus one's range, I do like betting half pot. But we checked, so we're heading to the turn having checked, and we turn a four. Or no?
Right. Unlikely. Yeah, we turn a four.
Okay.
It's unlikely. It's very good. It's a heart, so now there's two hearts, but there was only one on the flop. And then I don't know if it's strange, but the small blind raises out for 210.
No, I would say this is not strange. I would expect a good player to bet here a lot, especially if they have the same read as you, that under the gun plus one was likely to be pretty weak.
Yeah, I think that's right. And in fact, I basically hit the miracle scenario here with the last play. Like the best possible outcome from checking and appearing weak there is that I get a difficult to diagnose set. And this is exactly what I'm hoping for, even though it's an extremely unlikely outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. So
the second player under the gun plus one folds, and now I have an interesting question. Seems pretty clear I ought to be re-raising here, and the question is, what's the right bet sizing?
So before, I'm not sure yet if re-raising is correct. Let me make a case for calling. When you raise here, do you think it's likely that your opponent is going to think you're bluffing?
That's a good question. Let me think about it. I think you couldn't discount it completely. It's certainly something I would occasionally do, but pretty rarely, because I really have to be pretty confident he's got nothing to make. You know, at this point, there's like, I don't know, $6 or $7 in the pot once he bets. So it would have to be a pretty substantial bet to be worth him folding. You know, so that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a very good play to make too often. But it's also, you need to make that play sometimes.
So let me kind of build my case for calling. Probably our best case scenario is getting in three additional bets at this point. If we raise here, and our opponent re-raises us, I think it's pretty unlikely that we have the best hand unless our opponent is bluffing. Like, I don't think this guy is going to 3-bet the flop for value with any worse hands other than maybe queen nine, maybe threes. But I think if this player is a very good player, then he might even realize that it's probably best not to 3-bet the flop. 3-bet the turn with hands as weak as queen nine and threes. So I think our best case scenario is that we either raise the turn, get called, and then bet the river and get called again, or call the turn and then raise the river and get called. I think if more bets go in the pot than that, then it's unlikely we're going to have the best hand unless our opponent is bluffing. And I would be surprised if our opponent was going to bluff that relentlessly. I'd be impressed by it to a certain degree, but I would be surprised. So the other thing I'm going to make as a case for calling is, at this point in the hand, I think your opponent is going to think that you probably don't have that great of a hand, and under the gun plus one doesn't have that great of a hand. So I think this player is going to be bluffing with a lot of his weaker hands here, and I think if we call, then a lot of those hands will bet again on the river to see if they can get us to fold hands like, I don't know, maybe jacks or tens or I guess not nines, but eights, maybe even ace king he would think we would get stubborn with. So I think there's a lot of hands that will bluff twice, especially if he's going to be as wide preflop as we suspect. And if we raise here, I think we only get one bet out of those hands. So my overall point is that I think our best case scenario is getting three bets into the pot. I think we can either really do that by raising the turn and betting the river, or by calling the turn and raising the river. I think if more money goes in than that, we're not in great shape. And I also think that we miss out from a second bluff from our opponent if we raise the turn. So for those reasons, I think we should flat the turn, but I'd be curious to hear if you guys disagree with me. And I'm not positive, but that's just my feeling.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you, Jack. There's definitely times where in this exact spot, if I was in Zach's shoes, other Zach playing, I would be able to make this raise, given that maybe I've been playing aggressive all night, have shown down a bluff or two, and people kind of have in their mind that I'm bluffing. But that's against specific opponents that maybe aren't the best hand readers, where in this spot, even if I'm maybe bluffing or over bluffing a lot of spots, this is a spot where I'm generally under bluffing against most opponents, you know, as a general rule. So I would guess, based on like what I know about Zach Teutsch's game and kind of what you've said thus far, is that when you raise here, Zach, it's very, very unlikely to look like a bluff else in the game. So you're kind of just hoping that someone is going to have a hand like top pair or two pair and just not really think about what your raise represents and just kind of hang on because they have a good hand. But for the reasons Jack described, I think probably flatting is best, and that a raise on the river might look a bit bluffier. Yeah.
You know, I'm finding myself increasingly convinced here, because the idea, if I'm understanding it correctly, is that I'm only making money from somebody who I'm ahead of here. So, you know, unless I can get them off a very good hand, which, you know, seems unlikely. So the idea is, how can I get them to put more money in? Is it more likely to be calling, or is it more likely to be firing again on the river? And it seems like what you guys are saying is it's more likely to be firing on the river than getting a call in this spot. So flat it, and hope that something interesting comes or a blank comes and they're willing to fire another bullet.
Yeah, because, you know, if this opponent is bluffing, and especially your line looks kind of weak here, like if your opponent's bluffing and you think they're maybe doing that most of the time when they're betting here, you don't want to take away their initiative.
Right. And what do you think they're putting me on that flats here rather than folds to a reasonably, you know, to slightly more than half size bet?
I think this hand is very consistent with, you know, pocket fives through pocket jacks, maybe without a set of nines. Like maybe you check back from some of your really big hands to kind of slow play on a really dry board, but then you also have kind of all of your middling pocket pairs, and then maybe you have a hand like ace king.
Yeah, I think that's right. And maybe the fact that we just got a heart on the turn means that maybe somebody who's holding two hearts to start out with is willing to float for a round here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if... Right, yeah. I think you could definitely have heart draws here too, and you would call some of them.
You might even be willing to represent, if you see another heart, the texture is such that's a great potential bluffing opportunity, I think, especially considering the check on the turn.
Well, wait. Sorry, you lost me there. Not audio wise, but I'm not.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense wise.
So right, you're, what hand? Who would be bluffing on if the river was a third heart? So you're saying you would bluff if check two on the river?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I would, but I'd certainly think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you had a hand like sixes or sevens, a hand like sixes or sevens that was now very unlikely to be good, and you got checked too, I think that's the type of hand that would make sense to turn into a bluff. I think fours would be clearly far too strong of a hand to bluff with. I think there are plenty of
given the fact that I now have my mate set, that's not a very interesting thing to be thinking about. I think I was thinking more generally about who calls here, not what I actually have.
Right. And I think there will be other bluffing opportunities, including bluffing with hands that you were calling expecting them to be good enough on the turn. And when the heart comes and you get checked to, all of a sudden, you know, the equity against that range that plays like that is really poor, and those become perhaps your best bluffing candidates. Anyway, are we all sort of aligned that flatting the turn is likely the best play in order to... I think the main things to recognize about the situation are that, in my opinion, this player, I think, is not going to think it's likely that you're bluffing if you raise here. And if he doesn't think you're bluffing, I don't think he will continue in any capacity with his bluffs, and might even fold some hands that he would have bet again on the river for value. And so I think we're missing a second bet from much of his range, and we can still get that third bet anyway, and we're not missing a fourth bet, since I don't think a fourth bet is getting called by worse anyways.
Roger.
Cool. But we raise, which, you know, we got a set. I don't. It's not a disaster.
Wait, Jack, was that a compliment?
No. I mean, it was a soft. I'm just softening. I don't know why I even said that. I think it is kind of a disaster. I think you're not a disaster in, like, we're playing, you know, poker and, like, nothing is that bad. But in terms of, like, EV, I do think raising is a big mistake.
So we can never use disaster while playing poker then.
No, you can never use disaster while playing poker. If anything disastrous happens while you're playing poker, you have put yourself in a situation that you should have not put yourself into.
Oh, no. See, that's gotten... I think that's exactly right. And you've got the financial advisor and planner in me very interested, because I think that's exactly the right idea. If anything disastrous could happen, you're playing poker wrong.
Mm-hmm. But if we're defining disasters, I think the EV difference between raising here and flatting is... Over 10 big blinds, that's a disaster in poker. So I do think it is a disaster.
Sold. Yes, suffice to say, you convinced me. I think the most likely result of this play is that the small blind is caught and quits. Because I think a reasonable thing that could have been going on here is he has very little. The problem is even if he has like ace king at this point, I actually would be thrilled if he hits his ace or his king. Like, that would be the best possible scenario. So maybe this is especially a poor play because I'm not letting, it's very unlikely that there's any, that he can have anything here that he folds that could, sorry, I said that in a very convoluted way. Let me try again. The hands that the possible drawing hands here that that he can hit are mostly not going to get ahead of me. That was also a confusing way to say it. It's actually bad for me to chase out ace king at this point. I would love ace king to play.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe the worst part of this raise is that I chased out guys who, you know, I really want to hit their stuff. There's not a lot of hands that are behind me now that when I see another card could potentially be ahead of me.
No, I mean, to be fair, I will point out that a problem with my line of calling is that it's definitely not a really bad thing to get a flush draw to fold for a certain price. I mean, if we make a small raise and get a flush draw to fold, that can be a good thing, especially if we were planning on calling a bet when the flush came in, especially if our opponent would have given up with a flush draw when we called, if the flush draw bricked. But that, I think we've spent enough time on this turn.
Yep.
To the river. Or no, we don't even know what happened. What did you raise it to?
I raised it to six. He calls.
What did he bet again?
He bet 210. So I made basically a 3x raise, which is when I raise, I'm usually raising 3x in many spots. So that's a normal play.
Okay.
Whether he reads
default
it
size,
as, whether he reads it, yeah. Well, thank you, Zach. Whether he reads it as a strong play or a bluff, you know, that's an open question. But that's a very common bet sizing for me. So the pot now has 1570 in it, and then the river is a king of diamonds, which I think is actually a very, very good card for me.
I agree.
Because it means that anybody who had a king all along could be looking at two pairs now. I think it's pretty unlikely that the one thing I'm a little concerned about is his play makes some sense if he's got a pair of kings, but then I think he three bets on the turn with kings.
Well,
if you bet and I re-raise, I'm sorry, go ahead, Jack.
Oh, sorry. I'm not so worried about kings. I think kings often would raise preflop. I think a hand to potentially be more worried about is Jack 10. I don't think it's super likely to, one, flat preflop, two, to call your raise on the turn. But I definitely think those things are both well within the realm of possibility. And so a king does complete those hands. But I think whenever this guy has king X of hearts or king queen, it just became a lot more likely that we were going to get another bet in.
Yeah, I think that's right. So, and I hadn't thought as much about how Jack 10 is exactly fits with his pattern and his sort of bet sequence here. But now that you say it, I think that's right. That would look exactly like the way he played it many times. So he checks, which is either, I mean, I think he probably checks with Jack 10 here because if he's way ahead of me, he probably is checking in the hopes that he's check raising.
Yeah, I think it's likely.
But I think it is more likely based on the texture of the hand that what happened is he all along had a drawing hand which never connected because he flatted in the first place and then he checked, and then when everybody was weak, he made one raise. The thing that puzzles me is in that scenario, why is he calling the turn? Like, what does it make sense to call the turn with there?
I mean, maybe he just has a draw and wants to hit even if he's not getting the odds. It certainly wouldn't be the first time in poker that happened.
Or he bet for value with like what is now a bluff catcher and hand like ace queen, queen nine, threes, and decided to call because thought there was a chance that he was good or that you were bluffing and turned to heart draw.
Yeah, so I think now, Zach, you made a good observation that maybe most of his range might be kind of misdraws, but he also has a lot of these bluff catcher hands that from an absolute hand strength perspective, they're not that bad. And typically in low stakes cash games, people aren't very good about separating absolute hand strength from relative hand strength. And I think now is the time to kind of get max value from their hands that are going to call and bet on the larger side, because you're not going to get any more money from missed draws unless you had some read that when you bet small, this player likes to overbluff. But I think kind of the best strategy here is to bet big and try to get value from, pairs of kings, ace queen, and just kind of make a polarizing bet size.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, I'm unnecessarily worried about getting check raised here, but maybe I shouldn't be that worried about it, given the texture.
I think if you get check raised and you bet large, you can pretty comfortably fold against this player. Jack?
So I think a factor here, which is not something that you or I, Zach, I think encounter too often, is that the stakes are really small. I'm assuming that everyone in the game, $20 is really not a very meaningful amount of money. And I think that has a couple of implications here. I think, one, we should bet on the large side. Or, sorry, I actually think there is a case for betting on the small side, which is to try and induce a check raise from missed draws. And I think that's probably a better play than it would often be because the stakes are very small relative to everyone's net worth. I think you could say the same dynamic would make betting large more successful, since I think someone is very unlikely to fold king queen here for $10, even if that is a pretty large bet relative to the size of the relative to the stakes.
Well, I actually think that king queen is very likely to fold a $10 bet into a $15 pot.
Oh, really?
But maybe not. I mean,
well, if you think that's the case, then I would either bet smaller or just check back.
I would be skeptical of that read, but I've never played in your game before.
You mean you think it's very unlikely that anybody's laying down king queen there?
Well, keep in mind,
for
if someone is
in a social game, like
if someone a very sophisticated player might realize that queen nine is perhaps a better bluff catcher than king queen, but I don't think that that's this player. So king queen in terms of absolute strength is the second best hand that we beat. The only better hand is pocket threes. So if we think that...
Oh, wait. I forgot that I saw king on the river. Yeah, of course king queen is,
oh, okay.
Is
cool.
Playing out at $10. Yeah. No.
Cool.
I had just remembered it being a blank, not a specific card. Yeah, no, that's right. So, yeah, I think the case for making a bigger bet is very strong. What I was actually thinking, which I think is a stupid and amateurish way to think about it, is... You know, there's a decent number of things that it's going to be hard for him to fold to a small bet. And I'd be very happy. Like, so what's the, given the size of the pot, there's definitely a bet I can make where I'm getting a call. If he's got something like ace king, ace queen, ace nine, you know, various things that have a piece of this. If he's got ace queen, I can't imagine he's folding to a small bet, although he's probably folding to, you know, a bet of like a $10 bet here.
Yeah.
But I think that's the wrong way to think about it. I shouldn't be trying to maximize my gain on completely whiffed hands. I should be trying to maximize my gain on plausibly winning hands.
Well, I don't think ace queen is a completely whiffed hand. Definitely completely whiffed hands. Like, the only way we're going to get more value from those are if they decide to check raise bluff. Do you think that's a move that this player is capable of?
I think it's possible, but pretty unlikely. Especially considering that that would have been a multi-stage play, because he did not three bet the turn, which would have been the obvious time to push back, right? Like, flatting and then check raising is a sort of a strange way to play it, right?
I don't think that's necessarily so. I mean, if he thinks that, I think something I would think in this situation is that if I three bet the flop, you are probably never really going to fold a hand like fours, since you definitely would think it's possible that I would be, you know, bluffing with my drawing hands. But if I check raise the river, you would think it's. I just think that that's the kind of thing I would do, because people normally don't ever give you credit for check raising the river. So I don't know.
So what do you do, Zach? And why, how much do you bet and why?
So I bet a very small bet. I make a $3 bet here, in the hopes that I want a bet that's small enough that if I get a big re-raise, I can get away from it. And also, but I think the most likely outcome is that I'm going to get a call from a worse hand. And I want to make a bet small enough that I'm going to get that call.
Yeah, so for the reasons described...
I don't know that that's the right... I was just going to say, I don't think either of those is a very compelling argument.
I think that if we're betting here, we should bet on the smaller side or the larger side. But if we're betting on the smaller size, it should be to call a re-raise for the reasons we described before.
Yeah.
But
well,
you're saying I'm hoping to
get re-raised for like an all-in kind of thing and then call?
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, because I guess it's not all that much more behind at this point. You know, that's like, there's 1570, so if we're both all-in, that's just like, that's him betting $15 and me betting $15 to win 30. So I should be at least a third to win that pot, I would think, with that set. Yeah, so maybe that's a good luck.
Again, it just depended on your opponent. Do they have a higher propensity to, you know, check raise as a bluff when they detect weakness based on your line and on your bet sizing? Or are they more likely to, you know, make a hero call with, you know, ace queen because they think that your line doesn't make sense?
If I could somehow teleport back to this game and advise you, I would suggest betting like $10 or $12 and folding to a check raise.
Yeah, agreed.
No, wait a sec. That doesn't make a lot of sense, because if I'm betting $10 at this point, I have very small amount behind. You really think it's worth folding my last, like, $5 or $6 or whatever?
Oh, it's $5 or $6?
No, let's recreate it. If I had, say, $30 at the start of the hand, and I had put, like, maybe $650 or $700 into the hand.
You put in a $1.20 preflop, and you put in $6 on the turn. So $720. Right. So you've got about $23 behind now.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if I bet $10 now, then I've got
13
behind.
I've
got more than $13 behind.
I mean, it's an exploitative play to say. It's highly exploitative to say, okay, I either think I should bet small and call a check raise, or bet larger and fold to a check raise, since you're probably getting a better price if you bet larger. What we're assuming is that we're going to be able to sort of play our opponent like a fiddle and create this illusion that we're probably never going to fold, and there's no sense in him bluffing when we bet large, and when we bet small, that we're sort of trying to project weakness and assuming that our opponent's going to pounce on it. Obviously, if we play in that way and our opponent can exploit us very severely, and that's the nature of exploitive play. We're sort of putting ourselves out on a limb and giving our opponent the opportunity to beat us, but expecting to actually be taking advantage of him much more often. My suggestion is that you make the bigger bet, since I don't think getting check raised as a bluff is particularly likely in either situation, and I think just based on the stakes of the game, you're pretty likely to get called by hands maybe even as weak as ace queen if you bet $10 here. Because remember, ace queen was top pair, top kicker up until the turn. That's a lot of attachment to suddenly part from just because a king came. The king really doesn't help you that much.
Yeah, I think that's right, man. I am yet again convinced.
Okay.
I think we've done what we can here. This was an interesting. This was a good hand. There's a lot to talk about, both in terms of understanding your thought process, the actual dynamics of the hand, and then I think creating a really nice exploitative plan for the hand that'll translate well to other spots. I think this was really valuable.
So thank you, Zach. Awesome, guys. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.